Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By Premium Plus Sports, the official travel agency of Babbittville Radio. By USA-SwimRun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, grab a buddy and give one a try. By our Challenge Athletes Foundation. This last year, we sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Speaking of challenged athletes, one of the event series that has always been open to having wheelchair athletes, amputee athletes, and New York at one time had 100 challenge athletes participating there. Our next guest, Scott Hootmacher, is a senior brand manager for Lifetime Tri. Hootie, how the heck you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. For a winter day here in Chicago, I can't complain.
And so your season kicks off, what, April 14th? You got South Beach, and then you go from there to CapTex and Minnesota and New York City. And so your series this last year, and we hear gloom and doom with the Escape from Alcatraz series, that Nations Tri, Philly Tri, those things going away recently. But you guys had a banner year.
We had a decent year. I don't know if I would say banner specifically, but we were fortunate enough to experience growth across our collective series. So we had just about 23,000 total athletes across our 8 events, which is about 500 additional athletes. And you know, the state of the marketplace, like you had mentioned, we're excited to see that. You know, we've made a couple of edits and changes to our repertoire, and it seems to be working. So we're going to try to keep our head down and put the pedal to the metal here.
The hard part about, you guys do big city races. You're in Minneapolis, you're in Chicago, you're in New York, you're in South Beach. What are the challenges of putting on big city races? It's one thing to put a race out in the middle of nowhere, but when you're talking about swimming in the Hudson and you're talking about big cities, what are the challenges that come along with that?
You know, the most obvious is trying to find that balance of not disrupting society by continuing to offer some of the most pristine race venues on the planet. You know, in hosting these in Tier 1 and Tier 2 cities, that comes with its own challenge as well. So logistically, it's working with the police and working with the city to get the right permits and to maintain the right amount of road closures, you know, from a timing perspective that can fit all the athletes on those courses. Because, you know, it's such a balance of keeping those windows open. There's extra cost with that, but then finding the athletes to hopefully fill that void so the event at least breaks even on some level. And then beyond that, you have all of your typical external factors that you can't control. So you've got weather, you've got special events that might pop up, that might push your permit to a various weekend, and those are always just challenges that you deal with as a race producer here in the triathlon space.
One of the moves you made last year is you'd been sanctioned through USA Triathlon forever, as most events are. This last year, you made the move away from that and decided to do your own thing, self-insure. When you look back on it now, is it the right move?
You know, again, considering the fact that we had growth, we experienced a positive year this past year, we believe we made the right decision. You know, and again, that was not made in a vacuum. So the fact that we chose not to sanction with USAT still doesn't show that we have any animosity towards them as a production group. The benefits that they offer, the typical race director, just didn't apply to our business model. And, you know, primarily that was the insurance component that we chose to self-insure through our own programming.
As a race director, so did you get any backlash from athletes? Because a lot of times athletes, they'll come to an event and they'll go, okay, I'm going to race New York, and that's going to qualify me for nationals. But if you're not part of that program, then people aren't qualifying for Cleveland. And did you see any negatives from that?
You know, a handful. We realized that there would be a little bit of impact, especially, like you had said, earning points and then qualifying for various championships across the country, of which we were often qualifying events. But again, the reality is if we heard from a couple of dozen athletes who did express that opinion, the majority of them still seemed to choose to race with us. You know, so it wasn't quite a deal breaker to the vocal minority, I guess, but we're still sensitive to that. We still want to be a good partner and a good neighbor here to the sport, to our fellow race directors, and then the governing body, the federation of our sport as well. So we're always trying to find that right balance, Bob.
Well, and the thing that I love that you guys do, Hootie, when you're doing, 100? How many indoor tries are you guys doing this year? Because we both know the key for the future of triathlon is growing the sport, getting new people to try the sport and realize how awesome it is. And that doesn't happen. The swim scares a lot of people. It doesn't happen overnight. And for you, for a lifetime, to use their clubs to do these indoor races where people are swimming indoors, where the water's warm and there's landlines and it's clear and nobody's hitting you in the head, and then you're riding a stationary bike and you're running a treadmill. How important have those been to not just the growth of your events, but also just the awareness for the sport?
We'd say they're huge. You know, we, as Lifetime, we're fortunate to have 140 health clubs here across North America, both the U.S. and Canada. And triathlon is such an interesting component for us as far as business goes. I guess we have to start with our why. Why do we care about triathlon? You know, and this starts with Bahram Karate, our CEO, and that resonates through the rest of our staff, and that we know triathlon is a daunting topic. It's something that takes work and perseverance, and there's animosity that comes through it, but it's such a perfect metaphor for life. As Lifetime, we're the healthy way of life company. We want to figure out how to inspire you and get you motivated to achieve that level of wellness in your life, and we use triathlon in this specific capacity to do that. So, you know, back up from what we know as the sport of triathlon and what's so media savvy, and that's really Ironman and the really epic, grueling part of the sport, we flip the model and we bring athletes into 100 clubs now, which we're doing in 2019. We hope to have 10,000 athletes across those 100 clubs, which is pretty incredible.
Wow.
And just, you know, kind of celebrate the fact that this sport is very simple once you break it down. It's a 10-minute indoor pool swim, a 30-minute indoor spin studio bike, and then a 20-minute run on the treadmill.
And as I tell people all the time, because I think there is that feeling, someone watches the Ironman on TV, and that's really the exposure, the national exposure we get, and they think 2.4 mile, 112 mile, 26.2 mile, giving up their family to train for this thing. And a lot of people don't even know that shorter distance, sprint distance, Olympic distance races exist. And those events are so sustainable. It's something you can do forever. And I think all of us have a vested interest in making sure that people understand that this distance is attainable without giving up your life and your family.
Yeah. I mean, to that very point, that's one of the reasons we changed a lot of our initiatives in 2018. You know, this is just over a year ago now, that, you know, I had spoken with you, and I think I had mentioned that we can't consider ourselves race directors or race producers. We're really in the athlete development world. We have to not only sell the sport, but then educate our athletes and help train them or pass them to the right resource that can get them, you know, motivated, prepared, and just ready to toe the start line so they have a good experience and they want to come back. And I think we all have to take that into our consideration. You know, whoever you are in the triathlon space, it comes with a lot more work now than I think it ever has. That's important for us to keep carrying on.
It's funny because we think in this day and age of Facebook and Instagram that there's so much easier to promote. And at the end of the day, it's still a matter of people getting in the water in a clinic and feeling comfortable. People understanding what the word transition means and taking off a wetsuit, putting on a wetsuit, and getting from swim to bike to run. At the end of the day, we can talk about technology all we want. It's still one-to-one, don't you think, of getting people to a clinic, getting people to an indoor try, and understanding how this is the fountain of youth. This is something you can do forever, and this sport will change your life.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, creative marketing and advertising is not going to save our sport. It's those of us who are invested in it being willing to have conversations with strangers and to share our successes, you know, and our trepidation, some of our missteps, I guess, so that's relatable to the potential new market. And they're committed on some level. They're interested. They're inspired to want to take a shot at that. You know, once you earn that title of triathlete, things change. You know, your boundaries shift. You think different of yourself, your goals, and your future is a little bit more optimistic. I mean, not to get too philanthropical there, but
no, but it's true. Oh, it does. It's like the greatest endorphin there is you come across the finish line at, you know, at 10 o'clock in the morning and you got the whole day in front of you and look what you've already accomplished. And you know, you get up in the morning, you're like, God, do I really want to get up? It's dark. I'm going to go out there and the swim could be cold. There's all sorts of doubts that you overcome throughout those couple of hours that help you in everything else you do.
Yeah, there's no question. And a lot of that, it's all community focused. You know, that I think that's a huge opportunity for whoever it is in this space, especially all the mom and pop shops who have started up this sport, you know, 40, 45 years ago. These are all independent families who really saw an opportunity to get their friends together and, you know, kind of scare each other into showing up and just finishing a triathlon, the swim, bike, and run back to back to back. And that's a huge piece of this that we've got to figure out how to keep doing that. You know, those pockets of influencers who have the reach to bring people together to do the training, to do the educational sessions, the one-on-one webinars, and what have you, just to keep this thing moving forward. It's all about people.
Totally. And the other side of this, when you did move away from USA Triathlon, you had to create, you know, now you need to have your own officials. You need to create rules and regulations, yeah, right? Because it's all that stuff was part of USA Triathlon. The downside of that is you have to do all that. But I'm guessing that you learned a lot from that as well.
We have. You know, the educational piece of this, like I had just mentioned, that definitely follows through in administering a rules program. So we're extremely fortunate to have Rosalind Popham, whom you know, who is, yes, our head official. And she and a group of very dedicated triathletes and coaches got together to really to pound through what an effective rules program looks like. And a lot of it is simple conversation that we now allow during our races that help educate athletes, both in preventative measures before they might earn a penalty, wearing their headphones if they run out T2, and then in administering a penalty tent program, just like we see in Ironman or ITU, where athletes, once they're penalized and they're alerted of a penalty, they report to a tent, and our staff there know exactly what happened, and then they can educate somebody on the rules of drafting or blatant littering or just, you know, some of the nuances that as athletes are penalized in the past, as our athletes were especially, they had no idea. And they, right, might have seen 2 or 4 minutes added to their time, and that just creates so much confusion. And then for us, from a customer service standpoint, we can't relate to what that is. And we just figured there was a better way to do it. Well, we had some great successes this past year trying something new.
Well, and the thing that we forget sometimes, these are our customers. At the end of the day, we, as triathletes, we're competing with running events and cycling events and Tough Mudder and Spartan Race and Warrior Dash and Color Run. We have to make the consumer experience a great one so that they come back to do, because it isn't just a matter of us, we're not putting on races for just the pros. We're putting on races for people who are spending their hard-earned money to come out, and we want to make sure that experience from A to Z is the best ever.
Yeah, it's such a fine line. You know, we have so many different markets or so many different groups that we start to classify now with us trying to sell the sport and to sell our events. You know, from giving newbies a really comforting and a non-intimidating race experience to then taking care of our veteran athletes who want to be competitive and just push the pedal to the metal. You know, and we've even got this group of people whom we've spoken about in the past who, these lapsed athletes or these retirees, which I might classify myself in that boat, who we need to figure out how to get them back in our space just to participate, not necessarily to race, and to let them know that just being a participant is okay, and that's enough.
It's fascinating to me because if you are somebody who's been doing the sport for a long time, you get to the point where you go, well, I'm a triathlete. I swim, bike, and run every day. And do I really need to get up at 4 in the morning and go out to a race to prove that I'm a triathlete? Because I know I'm a triathlete. bridging that gap and making sure people understand that, yeah, we want you part of the family. We want you to come out and enjoy the races as well, because that sort of validates why you do the swim, bike, and run each day.
Right.
So talk a little bit about the plans for this year. You're, like you said, eight events, and people can go to lifetimetry.com to basically sign up for any of the events. When I look at the series and the two events that really obviously stick out to me, that they have so much tradition, when you talk about Chicago and New York. New York, I have an affinity to, just because we do our show from there. But I love the fact that you swim in the Hudson, which is fast. And then you've got three epic parts of that race. You West Side Highway, which is totally blocked off, and then you run Central Park. And there isn't an event that has three epic parts of it like New York. Talk a little about New York and the specifically the challenges there, and what are your goals this year for that event?
Yeah, so New York has changed a little bit in the past 2 years. Most of our athletes are familiar with this now. The event used to sell out immediately through a lottery program. You know, and we've realized that our pricing model had to change. We realized that the lottery in itself scared a lot of potential athletes away. You know, people would rather sign up and commit to something today, knowing that they were in, versus
right.
Taking a shot at, you know, maybe getting in and then figuring out plan B down the road. So we took a lot of this into consideration, as well as the fact that the New York course has not changed since inception back in 2001, when John Corif worked with the U.S. Olympic Committee. You know, and that was originally a bid city for the 2012 Olympic Games. That's where that race came from.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so they wanted to prove that a triathlon could be held in Manhattan without disrupting society, and they did it, and they did it well. So, you know, taking all those things into account, we realized we had to make some adjustments. So New York is now an open general registration program. Registration is still open right now, nyctri.com. We have changed the course. Last year, we had a small course change where we changed the loop in Central Park for the run, which was very well received by our athletes, especially the CAF crew.
Yes,
you know,
we loved it.
The para-triathletes. And we're looking to make a couple more changes in the near future. And we can't quite say what that will be, but we know our bike course and some of our transition placements will change in the next, not in 2019, but in 2020, due to some construction. So, ultimately, we're talking about innovating. You know, I had a great conversation with Steve over at Delmo Sports a couple weeks ago, and you know, he made a great comment in our space. If we don't innovate every single year, then we're dead.
Exactly.
You know, athletes, they'll get tired, they'll move on to something else, they'll just lose interest, and we absolutely believe that. If we don't keep changing our athlete experience and pushing ourselves to do something a little bit different that just makes for a better experience, a less cumbersome experience, all of these things matter at the end of the day.
Well, in the other side of this, you know, you last year, I think it was last year, maybe even this year, you had, you know, prize purse for amateurs, you had, you know, tickets for VIP tent, you know, it's all sorts of national shipping of your bike. Talk a little about some of the other perks that you guys keep adding.
Yeah, so you're right. With New York, we have both a pro race where we give away about $40,000, as well as we created our championship model. So the rest of our series, all other seven events in the series, now qualify our top five placements across each competitive age group for the New York City Championship, which is a race within a race. So they start off just after the pros, you know, ahead of all the other age groupers in our New York City Triathlon. This past year, we had about 225 athletes participate in that. We had a $60,000 prize in cash purse. So about half of that was cash, half of that was in prizes. And we broke out a special section for our paratriathletes, you know, which we basically dubbed the CAF Challenge there. You know, and we had 35 to 40 CAF athletes participate in that unto itself.
Right.
Which we didn't know it at the time, but that's the only prize purse in the paratriathlon world, I believe.
It is. It is the only prize purse, which is, you know, which is positive and negative. There should be more, but the fact that you guys are doing it is awesome.
Right. So, you know, as part of that, you know, we're obviously stimulating awareness of people racing in New York City, you know, and these are both middle of the pack age groupers who are just curious of doing something really unique. And these are elite amateurs, basically, who can now qualify for this championship. And those who do qualify, we give them free bike shipping through Tri-Bike Transport. And we give them VIP tent tickets to our finish line. We give their family perks as well. They get all kinds of swag. It's really, it's very much of a Kona model, for whatever that's worth, and very much like Alcatraz, you know, or the Alcatraz, the Escape series.
Right.
Which that, you know, that's a whole different story, I guess, at this point. But we're just stimulating people to think differently about short course triathlon and keep this thing relevant. You know, the hassles of not just participating in the sport, but traveling across the country for an event that might take you 3 hours nominally. We've got to break through that and just let people know that it's still worth it. And the fact that we have some of these bigger market races, we have that ability to create destination experiences. So we're very fortunate with the model we've seen. We have a lot of success. We've registered as many championship athletes to date as we had in all of the 2018 event.
Wow.
So we're looking at good growth next year, Bob, and we couldn't be more excited.
So what are your goals for that New York race in terms of total numbers? Where were you at last year, and what would you like to be at this year?
You know, we registered just over 4,500 last year.
Uh-huh.
And as you know, there in Riverside Park, we only have so much space, just
right.
Like anywhere else on the island there in the borough of Manhattan. So we're going to stick with that. We're not going to increase our field size. We did increase it a little bit last year. But we're sticking with quality and not quantity.
That's
a very important piece. And, you know, the event should sell out here in the next month, if not sooner than that. So New York is, I don't want to say status quo, but New York is moving along nicely here. And we're watching the rest of our series hopefully follow suit with good trends, especially this far in advance.
Now, Chicago, you do a number of things where people can race multiple times over that weekend. Explain that, because when we talked about that in New York, that was new to me, and I think people love that concept.
Yeah, so this comes back to the idea of innovating. Something that we do that's very unique in Chicago, I guess we do a couple of unique things, but we really want to customize an experience for those athletes who've been around the block. Chicago is 37 years old this year. We have a lot of athletes who have raced upwards of 20 or 30 times, but they want to do something different. One of which, for the endurance junkie, is something called the Triple Challenge. And Chicago, if anyone's familiar with our race here, we have 2 days of racing. We actually race both the kids and then a short course super sprint race for the adults up at Foster Beach, up at the north end of the city. And then we have Sunday morning, it's the big event right downtown where we do the international and then the sprint distance. So our Triple Challenge is available to 175 athletes. It's one wave. It's a very hot commodity, which is nearly sold out at this point. But they race all three of the adult races over the course of the weekend. So they race the Super Sprint Saturday morning, which is a nice little tune-up. They're the first wave of the international event at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning. And then they have about 3 hours and 15 minutes to make sure they finish the race, they come back to the start line, and they start the sprint distance. Which is the last wave of race day.
Wow, that's a
so
lot.
They bookend all of Sunday. It's just about the equivalent of a half Ironman in total distance. But the fact that they've got to put the pedal to the metal to be able to get to that last sprint start, it's
yes.
Really cool to see that thing shake out.
That is so cool. I love that. And that's almost sold out already.
It is. Yeah, we take 175. I think we're at 125 total entries to date.
Love that. And training programs, what I've seen with the successful race directors out here in the West Coast is they're putting on open water swims, and they have free training online. You guys are going along that route as well, right?
All of it, yeah. You know, we are fortunate to have the Lifetime Health clubs.
Right.
And Troy Jacobson manages all of our coaching programs throughout the majority of those clubs. So we do have in-house training where it applies, but we, you know, again, as race directors and wanting to develop our own athletes, lifetime members or not, we host a series of swim clinics in nearly every market. And if we don't, then we partner with groups like Empire Tri in New York, Lake Nokomis Park, or the Park District in Minneapolis, Lake Nokomis there has their own open water clinics that we'll push our athlete towards. And that's critical, you know, to give our athletes that peace of mind to get out there with other triathletes, you know, to swim in open water and to not be afraid of just swimming next to someone or getting bumped or, you know, to go through the typical motions of what they're most terrified of. That's huge. In Chicago, you know, living here next to Ohio Street Beach, which is such a hotbed for triathlon training, we hosted 900 athletes at our largest event this past August, just before race weekend. And to see 900 athletes, the majority of which were in the water for the first time,
wow!
There's something special with that, with just capturing those emotions.
Absolutely.
You know, and the sense of accomplishment when you see these guys walk out of the water and know their race day is going to be superior. That's huge.
What's fascinating to me is sometimes when you've been in this sport for a long time, you get fairly jaded with, you know, Ironman. We have a very Ironman-centric world. And we forget that finish line is the same no matter if you're finishing a sprint, Olympic, or an Ironman. And when you're in Chicago or in New York and you see people who obviously are doing their very first triathlon and see them come across that line, does it surprise you to see that emotion?
I would think so. You know, I'm searching for the right words to that, but you're right. The perspective of how those of us who have been around the industry, those of us completed with an Ironman, you know, we lose sight of how important an indoor triathlon or a 5K is to a lot of these people. And we were all there at some point, you know, so that's where we as staff and as a lifetime team, we always have to come back to where we started and connect and relate to our customers and our potential customers on that level. And, you know, there's no judgment. There's no need to, you know, to feel superior or, you know, to project ourselves, which we can often do as type A, you know, very focused triathletes.
Yeah.
But it is amazing to see that and to realize then where those athletes go once they cross their first super sprint finish line, you know, and hopefully the majority of them stick around the sport. They stick around short course. They do elevate to the long course to get that out of their system.
And come back.
We absolutely need that. We need those lapsed athletes to realize that short course triathlon still has its place and that it's still enough to finish an Olympic distance race.
You mentioned the prize money for challenge athletes in New York, and New York has had a history of being, at one point, you know, PC championship and always has been open to hand cycle athletes, amputee athletes. Is that still a big initiative for you guys?
Right. Yeah, the idea of inclusion. You know, no one should be excluded for whatever reason to participate in our events. And we, you know, apart from New York, we have a huge program here in Chicago, where I'm based,
right,
with a group, the Dare to Try group.
Yes.
So Carrie and Dan and Melissa and, you know, they're very much the equivalent in showcasing their athletes and providing all kinds of camps and preparation programs to get almost 60 athletes here to race the Chicago event.
Love that.
So, yeah, I mean, and you know very, very well, anyone with whatever disability it might be who has the commitment and the drive to accomplish something like a triathlon, to those of us who are fortunate to be able bodies, there's not a better, more compelling story to be told there. And we can then internalize that and just get rid of any excuses or doubt that we have in the back of my hand, just because of the strength of what some of those athletes are doing to themselves.
So as a sport, like we just talked about, the Escape to Alcatraz series just closed down. So big races like Philly and Nations and Des Moines and New Orleans, events that had been around for a long time and had drawn big numbers, are just simply gone. What do we need to do for the sport of triathlon to get back on the right path so that we're experiencing growth?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question.
It is, I know.
You know, I think the first is to continue to create this and to just nurture this community. Those of us who are in the space, who love it, we have to do our due diligence, you know, on an individual basis just to spread the word. You know, to keep our sport alive, we have to find new blood. And that just comes down to these personal conversations of sharing our successes. So I think that's the first. It's just to keep the word of mouth and the awareness out there, which we're worried about now with that going away in some of these major markets, Philly, D.C., you know, like you had mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, the less you hear about a sport in your neighborhood, the less you're going to think about this sport in the future. But I think that's a huge piece. And the other is just to continue to make this, to innovate our sport, you know, to think about how rigid it really has been over the past years. You know, if you're, Bob, you're 35 years old, you're racing with the 35 to 39-year-olds. and you're starting now. You know, we know that that has scared away a lot of athletes who they don't care to sit around for 3 or 4 hours before they race. That's just not in their wheelhouse. So we've got to figure out ways to accommodate them. You know, those who want to show up whenever they want to show up, get them a decent race experience, and then get them out of there. The convenience factor challenges all of us, but we've got to figure out better ways to do that. And the other side is then innovating. It's, you know, what Steve had mentioned, it's figuring out different ways to keep this multi-sport event in front of athletes. And that might mean changing up the repertoire of always swim and then always bike and then always run. I think mixed relays has a really good potential to bring back a lot of these lapsed athletes, as well as to give some of the new athletes a very short taste of the sport at a very low price point. I think that's a huge piece that we can look at. And like you had mentioned, one of your sponsors, Swimrun.
Yes.
You know, we're very much watching the idea of back-to-back swimming and running and swimming and running and taking cycling out of it altogether.
Exactly. Which eliminates blocking off the roads, right?
Exactly.
And people going 40 miles an hour on a bicycle.
Every race director will tell you, you know, there are risks associated with the swim. We realize that. But the bike, really, you're talking about so much distance and the challenge of closing down roadways and then working with police and paying all the fees associated with that. That's a huge chunk of change.
No question.
I don't think biking should go away for what it's worth, the cycling portion, but to figure out better balances or maybe some nuances of offering more of the aquathlons, which we've gotten away from, or duathlons, or all of the choose-your-own-adventure types of opportunities, you know, it's tough to do that as a race director, to have 4 or 5 different race formats. But if that's what's going to get people out, give them a taste and hopefully get them hooked so they then upgrade to the full triathlon, I think it's always worth exploration.
Well, and what's fascinating to me is we have a group out here, the COS group, that puts on a number of triathlons in San Diego. Their whole philosophy is, listen, we got the roads blocked off anyways. We're going to have a duathlon. We're going to have an aqua bike, so swim run for maybe some people who are injured and can't run right now, or some of our guys in the 60 and over category who maybe don't run anymore but still want to be part of this world. And having all sorts of the salad bar, whatever you want to do, we got it. We're the place for you, right? You want to make sure that we want to keep people in and for them to go, God, I can't run anymore. Well, doesn't matter. Do swim bike done, right? Swim bike done. That's get your sandals out, put those in your bag. And as soon as you're done with the bike, you're done with the event. I love that because it gets, even if there's 50, 60, 70 people, that's still 50, 60, 70 entry fees. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. This is not a one-size-fits-all sport. We can't think that way, and we can't assume that we will be successful if we have, you know, moved down the road, I guess, that we were built on.
So,
a lot of us.
I was going to say, so in terms of Chicago, what type of numbers do you get over the 2 days of your events?
Yeah, we registered just under 10,000 collective athletes.
Oh, my God, 10,000?
Yeah, so we had just over 2,000 race on Saturday. That's about 1,000 kids and then 1,000 super sprint athletes. And then more than 7,500 on Sunday alone.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
So we're still proud, and we still dub ourselves the world's largest.
No, quite, well, you are.
We've got Hamburg. I know London is a pretty large event as well, but I think pound for pound, we used to have the Guinness plaque to showcase the fact that we were the largest back in 2006 or so.
Right.
Ironically, Nations Tri took that from us, and now Nations is no more.
Which is really sad when you think about that. That event was one of the largest in the world, and then it's gone. But so much of that is we're dealing with, and we've seen a lot of that this year with the climate change, and you got water quality. You're dealing with the Potomac. And, yeah, I mean, you're dealing with the Hudson, but in this particular case, once you've canceled the swim, you know, 3 times in a row or 5 out of the last 7 years, people go, well, I'm not going to sign up until I know the water's going to, so I can swim. It makes it really, as a race director, you can feel the pain.
Yeah, the swim is always a crapshoot, isn't it?
It is.
You know, we're all over the place. We swim in the Atlantic Ocean with South Beach. We swim here in Lake Michigan, you know, which is usually pretty moderate conditions,
right.
Pretty amazing conditions, but you still never know. And the Hudson, You know, of course, you've got to work with the tidal flows there, and there's a lot of commerce in that river, so we've got to work around a lot of boats.
Yes, a lot of boats. For you, do you get a chance to race anymore?
You know, I do. I still have to get at least one triathlon under my belt each year.
It's important.
This past year, it is. You know, for me to maintain some semblance of what it is that I'm trying to sell at all times, I have to put myself in that situation. And, you know, to my point of building that community and having that conversation, it's tough for you to sell the sport when they ask, well, when was the last time you raced? You know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I agree.
I suffer with living that life or with having to tell that story, so it is important. And I have registered for a pretty big event next year. I'm going to do the Ironman Coeur d'Alene 70.3 with a group of friends from here in Chicago.
Very cool.
Keep me honest again.
Got to do it. Got to race. So the best place for people to find out about pool tries and for the whole series is LifetimeTry.com?
LifetimeTry.com, that's right. Our indoor tries are all there. Our 2019 outdoor try series is all built in there. Lots of videos, lots of education, and just ideas of where you can be, where you can really, I guess, start your progress towards becoming a triathlete.
Love it. Hootie, as always, thank you for taking time. Thank you for what you guys are investing in the sport. I know it's not cheap to put these events on, and it's, you know, you guys are changing lives. These pool triathlons are getting people into our space and all the clinics. And what I love about it is if people are going, they're going to your clinics and they go do some other triathlon that's not a Lifetime event, that's okay. You just want them to get in the space.
Exactly. You know, like I mentioned, we're here to help inspire a healthy way of life. And we firmly believe that triathlon is a great vehicle to do that.
Perfect. Scott Hootmacher has been our guest. He's a senior brand manager for the amazing Lifetime Triathlon Series. And again, you can go to LifetimeTry.com. Check out all the events, New York, Chicago, South Beach, CapTex, Minneapolis, Tempe, Escape to Miami in September. It's a huge series. And if you haven't given a Lifetime event a try, you definitely should. Again, we're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, by Polar, Blood, Sweat, and Data. Premium Plus Sports, as we mentioned earlier, Swim Run USA, USA-SwimRun.com, our Challenge Athletes Foundation. First 25 years, we've raised over $100 million, sent out over 23,000 grants, but our job is not done. You can help us out at challengedathletes.org. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And until next time, remember, endurance lives forever.